It's Wednesday, the 8th of March, and you're listening to the Red Army Rounder. I'm your host, Paul Hinton, and as ever, I'm joined by Sean Phillips and Aaron Wren. Hello there, gents.
Hello there, Paul.
Evening, Paul.
And we're going to look back on a not-too-bad weekend to be a Cardiff Devils fan. Starting with the league trip up to Manchester Friday night, followed by the small matter of a Challenge Cup final on Sunday. Ask a player of the week to skip forward. We've had some Ramite suggestions, which we're going to discuss before having a little look around the news in and around the Elite League. We'll focus on the unfortunate and savoury incident. Unfortunately, we've got to talk about it, but, you know, we'll cover it, even though it has been done to death. Dave Sims' incident in Sheffield on Saturday. Before previewing the coming weekend of action for the Devils and for our title rivals. So, starting off with Manchester Friday, and, wow, it was great to see well over 100 fans in attendance, Sean, for a Friday night game where people would have to have taken time off work.
Yeah, good to see a big crowd head up. It promised to be an exciting game, and it definitely delivered in all the wrong ways. Just 2 minutes and 54 seconds in when the Devils turn the puck over in their offensive zone. Cartier makes a breakout pass to Darren Dzinski, who just races up all alone and on the breakaway drags it from backhand to forehand and absolutely pulls a great move to undress Ben Bounds and make it a one-goal game.
The Devils learned from our defeat to them at home just before Christmas, where we repeatedly got caught on the break that we didn't give a breakaway in the first few minutes of the game.
Yeah, and it just proves that you can't do that against a team like Manchester in a building where they're basically going to punish you if you turn the puck over. So, and a guy like Darren Dzinski, who's been in my mind, I think he's one of the best players in the league, and we gave him that opportunity and he took it really well.
Yes, yeah, definitely. The rest of the first period just felt like it was going to be one of those nights where the Devils were going to struggle to get a goal, and Mike Clementi played well with the net coming off a few times, and it did look a little bit dodgy, but it was right in front of the travelling fans, and referee Tom Perrin got quite a lot of stick every time that he let it go. But really looked like it was going to be a frustrating night for the Devils.
Yeah, definitely. But it eventually did get called. It got called in the second period after, I think it was maybe the third or fourth time it had happened. And I think Tom Perrin had enough and basically just wanted to throw down a marker and show that he wasn't happy with it. And Clementi couldn't get away with it all game. Admittedly, it didn't seem like it was entirely his fault. The pegs were barely a couple of centimetres into the ice altering him.
Yeah, it was great. But for me, that the decision from Perrin at the start of the second wouldn't have been given if that was an away game where there was a handful of Devils fans. I do think the fact that it was just constant noise every time it happened just played on his mind.
As the seconds ticked on in the second period, I sort of thought that it just wasn't going to go in for us. We were throwing it on net from left, right, and centre, and in a building like that, you throw a shot from anywhere, and in those tight spaces, anything can happen, it can go in, but Clemente was equal to everything. We had 24 shots in the first two periods, and luckily we managed to get an equalising goal just 13 minutes and 57 seconds into the second period. Law gets involved in a collision behind the net and goes down, but gets himself back up while Richardson keeps the puck in the zone. Tees up Matthew Myers, who floats a puck into the slot, and Law just plays an inch-perfect deflection down onto the ice, and it goes 5-hole to give us the leveler, and I think that sort of restored a bit of confidence that when we got one, we knew that we could score, and that it maybe wasn't going to be one of those nights. And it continued when at 19:24 in the second period, just 36 seconds left, Andrew Hotham slid the puck through the centre of the neutral zone to Lane Elmer, who gains his own pass into Patrick Asselin in the right hand circle, who pulls a great move from his forehand to his backhand to just get around the defenceman, drives the net and scores backhand to give us the lead in a really opportune time. And going into the dressing room, we go into the period break with a big lead.
Yeah, it always sort of those conversations talking about big time to score goals, and it was just 36 seconds left in the second period to get the go ahead goal was a big lift, and would have been demoralising to Storm, given that, you know, what they played well and Mike Clementi had such a good effort at keeping them in the game for so long. Obviously into the third period, things became a little bit more one sided with the Devils. You're managing to make that, you know, their four lines count against a team still, you know, coming over an injury crisis. And really were able to limit the Storm before Sean Bentifoglio got the insurance goal to make it 3-1.
Yeah, and it was a great play. The Storm turn it over in the offensive zone, and I just mentioned it with Darren Dzinski for the first Storm goal. You turn the puck over in the offensive zone and teams are going to punish you on the break. Bentifoglio picks the puck up, and Martin and Bentifoglio are just gifted a 2-on-1. Benty just drives to the net, and Martin splits the defence with the pass, and it's makes no mistake in putting it away to give us that to stretch the lead to 2.
Yeah, and things look comfortable there, but you've obviously got a little bit nervous following a high sticking penalty from Joey Haddad, and a holding the stick from Joey Haddad. So a high sticking from Matthew Myers gave Manchester a 5-on-3, which Mark Heatley managed to score on just as Joey Haddad's penalty expired, obviously ending the power play of Matthew Myers as well. But, you know, with just over 4 minutes left, Storm were just a goal behind, and you think things could have got, well, things started to get a little bit tense in amongst the Devils fans.
Yeah, definitely. Looking up, everyone was sort of, it had been loud since the third goal, and it got a bit quiet and maybe felt a bit cagey, but Manchester pulled their goalie at a pretty poor time, to be honest with you. They didn't get set in the zone. They just dumped it in, pulled the netminder, and the Devils worked just plain and simple, won the battle in the defensive boards, and Omar feeds to Dad on the halfway line, who fires home to give us that empty net goal.
Anyway, to show how poorly timed it was, Mike Clementi's ice time was 59 minutes and 55 seconds. So he was off the ice for a grand total of 5 seconds before that empty netter went in. So,
yeah,
you know, really, really bad decision either on his part or on the part of his bench coach to get him pulled. Yep, you said Joey Dad made no mistake, and you know, Devils throughout the game as 4-2 winners.
Yeah, Devils went 0-3 on the power play. Storm went 1-3, and the Devils outshot the Storm by 36-23.
A note to the Devils' defence, which we will talk about again in just a moment. We come on to the Challenge Cup final, but you know, a team that was chasing the game, we were still able to limit Storm to just 4 shots in that third period, including, you know, a prolonged spell of 5-on-3 that they had for practically a minute's worth of 5-on-3 and a power play before that. So,
yeah,
you know, good work from the Devils' defence there.
Yeah, credit to Manchester, though. The 5-on-3 goal was literally inch perfect. You can't ask for a more clinical power play goal. Their cycle was excellent, and passes were on the tape, and Heatley finds himself in the slot, and he scores, and to be honest, it was quite a fair result of the effort that they put into that power play, and it worked wonders for them in that case.
Yes, yeah, definitely, and we've said it so many times, and I think it's obviously why it is about various teams. You know, when you see a team play that well, it's always surprising to see them struggling, you know, at the bottom of the playoffs, but we've probably said that about all of the teams, you know, who are in that fight, and you know, Edinburgh as well, who look like they've been cut adrift a little bit at the bottom. So, you know, there's obviously a lot of strength and depth in the league this season, so it's not a surprise, I guess, to see these teams causing us problems.
Yeah, for sure.
And speaking of teams causing problems, before we move onto Sunday night, just sticking with league action, Sheffield, quite famously now, I think, had to play Saturday, home to Coventry. They decided not to book a fixture on the Friday. They did it Saturday instead, and were unable to move it because of a league rule that they had helped to vote in. But they decided, well, they rested Valdix and Fretta and ended up losing 4-1. With Mike Clementi being pulled after 2 periods. What was a massive boost to the Devils' title chances, Aaron, and you know, a bit of a dent in the confidence of Sheffield going into Sunday?
Well, yeah, Coventry, you know, we absolutely smashed them their previous game, and they just come out wanting to win, and they done a brilliant job keeping Sheffield at bay. And I think what Sheffield done was worry about the game that's coming in front of them than the game that they was playing, and it caused them a lot of distress, you know, worrying about who to sit, who to play, injury cover and things like that. And it was difficult. It seemed like it's what we would have done a year ago, 2 years ago, instead of taking a game at the time. Sheffield worried about the big cup final, the big trophy, and it cost them dearly. And I don't want to say this arrogantly, but the points we got and the points Sheffield got, it's a big gap for them to close down now and catch us up to win the league. It's not impossible, but it is pretty hard for them to do now. So
the result means that your Devils only need 3 points from their remaining six games to guarantee finishing above Sheffield. But with the two games Sheffield had against Cardiff, if they'd have beaten us in both of those in regulation, 4 point gap to turn, and with us playing Belfast twice, doesn't seem to be totally out of the question. So short view, do you think it was a little bit premature on the Steelers' part to, not necessarily to write off their league chances, but to risk resting two players who admittedly did carry Knox, but you know, and especially in Colton Frett, who's such an important player for the Steelers?
I think when you look at it, it was a long shot. It wasn't impossible, but it was still a long shot from to go the distance and win the league title. But and they prioritised. I'll give them credit for that. They saw the Challenge Cup as their best opportunity to win a trophy out of the two, and they took the decision to rest Valdix and Fretter. And I can understand that. I think I would have wanted us to do the same thing if we were going down the stretch. If we needed to win everything and have other results go our way, I feel like I would take the same mentality, to be quite honest with you.
Yeah, and obviously a win for Sheffield would have looked, on Sunday would have looked a genius move, no doubt. But obviously it didn't work out for them, and I guess hindsight, as they say, is 20/20. So just one of those things that didn't pay off for them. But yeah, I think I still think there was an element of players were rested. It seemed to have really rattled Paul Thompson, the fact they had to play on Saturday, and yeah, we discussed last week around whether it was mind games or genuine stress, but an interesting decision to take. But it took us into Sunday, and Sheffield came into Cardiff for the first final host at Ice Arena Wales. And before we get onto the game, I felt that the Ice Arena Wales was too small. Obviously, there were Devils fans who wanted to go, who couldn't. I guess that's the nature of having a home rink. But the atmosphere was so much better than what we've had in Sheffield the last 2 years, even the one between ourselves and Sheffield, which was well attended. To have an absolutely packed 3,000 capacity stadium, almost split 50-50 between Devils and Steelers fans, Aaron, led for a fantastic atmosphere, even well before the puck dropped.
You know, when we played in Sheffield the last 2 years, we've only managed to take what we would have filled the rink with just because of the distance travelled, and some fans might not be able to afford it and things, or different circumstances. But the fact that half the rink was red and half the rink was orange, it was just fantastic to see. And credit to the Sheffield fans, you know, we always give them stick for being a quiet team, you know, not making a lot of noise. They did put a good shift in, and it just created a absolutely fantastic atmosphere, and what turned out to be an even better game. And just like I said, credit the Sheffield fans, commiserations, but we won, so.
So heartfelt.
How delicately put.
It was. In terms of Ice Arena Wales, though, Sean, you know, the atmosphere, the quality of the final, really couldn't have asked for anything more as your first time hosting a major showpiece event.
Well, it was a perfect cup final. I can't say any more than that. As Aaron mentioned, the Sheffield fans, they brought down their loudest contingent, and I thought they did brilliant. I thought they were great from start to finish. In defeat before the game, I thought they were outstanding. And if you if for whatever reason you were a neutral watching that game, what a great game of hockey it was, and to see the atmosphere there, I think it's the best atmosphere that I saw in Wales have seen, but by an absolute country mile. The Devils fans who were there were absolutely unreal, and it's always great when you have the two sets of fans battling and the teams on the ice sort of reflect that. It was a pretty well hard fought final between both teams and the fans.
Yes, yeah, most definitely. You said about the atmosphere being the best. It just shows that having that 50-50 split was, you know, so important. And it was another point you said about the loudest Sheffield fans travel. That's 1,500 fans, I think. Sort of goes to show the perils of having such big arenas, that you can have that many fans who are capable of making that much noise, but it can still get lost if you've got an arena the size of Sheffield. So whilst there's a lot of talk, is Ice Arena Wales too small for us? I'd rather have it like that. And, you know, we're able to bring the atmosphere every week if, you know, when we do, rather than having it lost in, you know, a massive arena just for the sake of having a few more seats in there for when we can fill them.
Can I agree more?
On to the important stuff. The game started at one of the most frantic paces I can remember in a game. Pucks seem to go end to end. There seem to be chances for both sides, and Gleeson Fournier gets the go-ahead goal at 3 minutes 53, but to me it felt like we watched about 10-15 minutes worth of hockey. I was exhausted when that goal went in, and did worry for how I was going to get through the remaining 56 minutes. But a cracking finish from Fournier, Sean.
Yeah, it was a great, great goal. And it all starts with Ben Bounds in the defensive zone. He makes a good couple of saves. Sean Bendivoglio recovers the puck behind the net and paddles it off to Fournier in the corner. He sort of nudges it up to Kearney, just by the Devil's bench, who nudges it forward onto Joey Martin at centre, manages to gain the zone, drop pass back to Sean Bendivoglio, holds the puck on the play, right at the top of the circle. Fournier works his absolute bag off to drive just into the slot, gets the pass and just absolutely rips a bullet high glove side on over his Mustakovs. It was a great, great finish and a well-worked team goal. And it all starts from that man at the back, Ben Bounds. And great to see. It was a perfect team goal. You know, originally set up by Sean Bendivoglio onto Fournier, who finds Kearney. Unfortunately, Kearney can't get a point on there because you've only got the two assists. But he's heavily involved in it and Bounds is as well. So a perfect team goal and a good to sort of swing the momentum back. Sheffield had a good couple of chances and we came right back and managed to grab a goal. And the perfect start in what was, as you said, the game was 100 miles an hour right from the first puck drop.
And you know, whilst Devils would have got a lift from the goal, it, you know, really didn't let up for the rest of that first period, did it?
No, I didn't know.
But whilst it remained at hell of a pace and, you know, heart attacks every time Sheffield went near Cardiff net, it did remain like that until 16 and a half minutes in, when Robert Dowd took a bit of the wind out of the sails of the Devils fans, Devils team as well perhaps, and tied the game up.
I think the Devils had a bit of a good mindset in the fact that they killed a 5-on-3 as well. So that was probably in their minds that they killed a 5-on-3 and maybe sort of ridden the wave a bit and could turn the tide. But it's a great goal from Sheffield. Robert Dowd is relentless in his forecheck to retrieve the loose puck in the corner, rings it round to Nelson, lays off Fitzgerald, who just, the drop pass to Dowd in the circle is literally inch perfect. Dowd just drifts over to the slot, waits for Bounds to go down and goes 5-hole. And it all starts from the man who scores the goal in Robert Dowd with a relentless forecheck and a great goal from them.
Yes, yeah, and you just
I hated it, but it was a great goal.
It was a great goal. And just a minute and a half later, things, you know, get worse for the Devils. A bit of a mix-up on a line change. Caesars take a too-many-men penalty that caused quite a lot of angst and anger amongst the Devils fans as the puck wasn't played. I think we had a bit of a disagreement over a couple of beers later in the evening, Sean, about whether or not it should have been a penalty. But I know on your part that both Devils had tried to play the puck at one stage before turning to leave the ice.
Yeah, was it? It was. In my mind, it was the correct call.
Yeah. Me too.
Ah, we're all in agreement now. Perhaps it was just the alcohol. So led it to being an
alcohol. I think I would have agreed with you in the stress.
Yes, nothing's ever a penalty against you during the heat of the game, is it?
Well, no, that's true, yeah.
But Devils were unable to hold, having killed the 5-on-3 early in the period, as you said, unable to hold out this time. And old Matty Roy managed to give the Steelers a lead with just 41 seconds left in the period with another great finish, Sean.
Yeah, an absolute bullet. It does get a slight deflection of Scott Hotham, who's trying to block the shot, but Matthew Ward just rips one past bounce stick side, and the worst possible time to concede a goal. As we said, we maybe had a couple of minutes where heads could have dropped. You know, we killed the 5-on-3. We didn't have much of a chance to pick up our momentum because Sheffield scored shortly after we managed to kill it, and then they go and add that, and I was quite downbeat going into the first period break, to be quite honest with you.
Yeah, it was difficult for me. I sort of thought after such a good performance, that second goal hadn't put anything out of reach. I felt more confident at that stage than I did before the game because I knew the Devils had turned up. Aaron, did it take the wind out of your sails, or were you, I know you weren't particularly confident before the game. You had a bit of a bad feeling, but how did the first period leave you feeling?
Just coming in there, the way that Aaron looked at me through the entire second period, shaking his head, literally looking like a lost puppy, implies that he was devastated going into the first period break. Just say that. Now go ahead, Aaron.
Pretty much what Sean said. I've been, like when we recorded last week, since we recorded last week, I've been on the edge of my seat, so can't sleep. I know it doesn't look like it, but I can't eat, and I was just so nervous. And that first period was... The only thing I wanted us to do was the same as we'd done last year against Nottingham, was just turn up and play a game that we can hopefully win. And that first period proved that we could do it. And when I always think in my mind, if you score in the first 2 minutes or the last 2 minutes of a period, you set yourself up for a great either 20 minutes or going into the next period. And, we conceded in the last minute of the period. And I was just going in, I was just like, oh, come on. I'll be honest, I wasn't confident for the entirety of the game until the final whistle went. I was nervous in a bag of nerves, really. But I was proved wrong. That's all that matters.
Yeah, the second period was a bit of a departure from the first one in that the Devils made nearly every chance in the period, outshooting the Steelers 17-2.
Yeah.
Having a lot of zone time, but for the majority of the period, really struggled to make it count where it matters on the scoreboard.
Yeah, I think what we really struggled with is that I think Sheffield got the lead. And Paul, you said it perfectly to me at the end of the second period, was that they played that final like the Devils used to play up in Sheffield, where they got the lead and they collapsed and collapsed and collapsed. And whereas when we played in Sheffield, we looked to maybe catch everyone on the break. They didn't sort of, if there was a puck loose on the boards, whether it was a 50-50 battle that they could have gone up and scored another goal, they weren't going for it. They were collapsing incredibly. And it's sort of, you sort of got the feel that they knew that they were going to struggle to go on and score another one. And they were looking to just frustrate us into making mistakes. And in fairness, the pucks were just all over the place. The rebounds that Mustakov was given up right into the slot, loose, just someone on the end of it, and it's tied. And it was unfortunate that we didn't get it earlier, but as Aaron mentioned, the last sort of 2 minutes of a period are right up there. It wasn't quite 2 minutes, but just with 2 minutes and 20 seconds left, Benevolio floats one in on the net, and Mark Lewis, Mark Lewis is a defenseman. What Mark Lewis is doing right in front of the net on the edge of the crease, God only knows. But thank goodness he is, because he plays an absolute belter of a deflection down through Moose's five hole to give us the tie going into the second period break. And at that stage, I thought Sheffield, I didn't think Sheffield were going to score again. The way that they played, they were constantly collapsing. And when they came out for the third doing the same thing, there was only one way that game was going.
There was, and you know, 3.5 minutes into the third period, Aaron's man, Lane Ulmer, you know, finds himself in the slot and scores, you know, cracking goals all the way through the game, actually. But, like you said, when that goal went in, it was 3-2, obviously, you know, the game's anybody's, but it did just have that feel. But, you know, just such another clutch goal from a guy who's found such good form since Christmas, Aaron.
Yeah, you know, he received a lot of stick before Christmas, and I always said the guy, even before he found form and started scoring, he was always getting in the right positions, always looking for the pass and things like that, doing the things right, that just wasn't getting a bounce. And, you know, Astley makes a great move. He dangles Hagos out of his skin. How Hagos had ankles left to skate back to the bench. Because I didn't even notice it on the, well, when we scored the goal, because I was absolutely in awe. Like, I watched the highlights, and it's just unreal. It's when you see, like, them videos on YouTube or Facebook where, like, someone dekes someone out of their skin or someone, and then you've got, like, everyone's like, oh, in the background. When I watched it, I was like, I'm work, and I had my headphones in, and there was customers there as well, so it didn't go down well. But it was just an absolute fantastic goal. Lane Ulmer does what he does best, finds himself in the slot and just plants it home past Moose, and that's all she wrote.
Well, it very, very nearly wasn't all she wrote. Just over a minute after Ulmer's goal, Levi Nelson takes a tripping call, which, you know, you think is a great opportunity for the Devils to capitalise on, you know, on their lead, try and extend it, put the game, you know, practically to bed at that stage, but gives up a massive, massive breakaway chance to Davey Enshorn. And, you know, Ben Bamzu, as we said, had almost nothing to do all the way through the second period, came up big with that one-on-one save.
Yeah, and I felt so bad for Hotham as well, because he played so well during the game. And we're on a power play. He tries to fire one in on net, and it hits a man in front, and he just falls over. And Debian goes rushing up, and you just think, ah, really? You know, that Hotham's played such a great game, and then this goes and happens. And as Debian was racing up the ice, I just thought, please just stop it, because Hotham does not deserve to have the brunt of that, because he played so well during the game. And as you mentioned, bounce comes up big. I think that it was mentioned on the highlights that Moose absolutely robbed Joey Martin in the dying seconds of the second period, and it was a world class save, and just the stones of Ben Bounce to not go down and make it look like he was easily beaten, just to stand tall, stand up, and just get a piece of it. And he did, and what a massive, massive play. And, you know, you say it was all she wrote, but going into the last couple of minutes, Sheffield were relentless. You know, when they pulled their goalie, they had some real good zone time, and that was the first time in the game, I feel, where they did what they were good at. We've seen them for so many years just press us and pin us in the zone and cycle the puck well, and they did it for a good couple of minutes on the power play as well, while Chris Culligan was serving a penalty. And
do you think it was interesting they didn't look to pull Moose until that penalty was expired? A lot of teams would have tried to take a 6-on-4 advantage, but
I can see why they didn't, because obviously you've got the disadvantage of if the Devils then ice the puck, then you can't obviously take the ice in, and it takes more time off the clock.
Shot at an empty net as well, isn't it? So
exactly. Yeah, you know, it's and if it doesn't go in, then the puck doesn't have to come all the way up. The Steelers have to chase it. If the Devils forecheck hard, then they can get a man on the end of it, a quick change, and I can see why they didn't go like that. But in fairness, Martin is on the PK. And he has a bit of a battle with Matthew Watt at the blue line. And just absolutely, so clutch of Joey Martin. There's a battle on the blue line. Watt, Sheffield's best player or most valuable player. Joey Martin, the Devil's most valuable player, are on the boards having a battle. And Joey Martin just works his absolute bag off, clears the zone, dumps it up and goes for a change. And before you know it, Chris Culligan's back on the ice. And then that final, that sort of final spell was quite tense with a good couple of shot blocks from Chris Culligan on the blue line. And takes a high stick as well when he's trying to block another one before Lane Elmer gets on the end of it with in the defensive zone and just skates into the corner, rings it around with about 3 seconds left, and then that was actually all she wrote. And boys, the Devils are the Challenge Cup champions again.
Easy, easy, easy.
I definitely wouldn't go that far with it. But, you know, as you said, hell of a game. But you said two shots in the second period, Sheffield had, even with that power play and the extra skater, only managed three in the third. You know, a fantastic defensive display from the Devils when it was needed. But potentially just a complete departure from what Sheffield have done against us nearly all season. It's funny to say that they have only beaten us once. But it's not like, I think only one of those games has ever been a decisive win.
Did they beat us in the cup game at home as well?
And they did also beat us in the cup game at home, which was actually, it was only one goal, but they dominated us in that game. But, you know, I can't remember ever seeing Steelers collapse like that. So unless, obviously, you can assume Valdix and Fretter are carrying injuries, but unless there are a lot of injuries in that team or a lot of tired bodies, it just seems crazy to be collapsing at 2-1 just at the end of the first period. But it never worked for us there and didn't work for, didn't usually work for us there. We definitely didn't work for Sheffield on Sunday night. And as you said, Devils are the champions. Worth noting that 40 shots the Devils managed on Mustakov's. So a 37 save night, and he really was a worthy choice for their man of the match.
He was phenomenal. I thought he was their best player. He kept them in the game, gave them a chance to win it. And if they had gone on to win it, then it would have been almost solely down to him, because he was excellent. As much as he's a bit rubbery, a bit reboundy, he made some incredible saves, and the Devils peppered him all night, and yeah, he was by far their best player, I feel.
And to be fair, that collapse in defence is needed playing with a goalie like Moose, but only once the shots got off, I guess, not the whole time the pucks are loose around the boards, as you referred to earlier. But the Devils are the Challenge Cup champions for the second time in 3 years, and very special doing it on home ice, and something that 1,500 plus Devils fans who were there will be a memory cherished forever, but hopefully surpassed in the coming weeks. It was hopefully, I've not said anything.
What did you make of the four-man system, Paul? And the performance of the referees?
I thought overall it was pretty good that they let the game flow. It was good that the two refs seemed to be on the same page. We've had four-man games in the past where you've had a referee looking to call everything at one end of the ice and the other referee trying to let the game flow. Tom Perrin didn't really do a great deal.
I don't think he called a penalty.
I think it was all Darnell. So it's interesting as to whether, to talk about what impact he had, but there was very little off the puck incidents with guys, sticking behind the play and holding other players back, which you often see when the three-man system's in place. So if all it did was eliminate that, then I'd say it was well done. But I think overall as well, they did have a good game. I think the call on Chris Gulligan at the end was probably a call, but it hadn't been a call for the previous 57 minutes. So
exactly, that was literally game. You literally just took the words right out of my mouth. I thought they had a great game and they set the tone, and they probably helped to make it as good a final as it was, because if you'd have had penalties left, right, and centre with no flow to it, I think it would have just got dull, to be quite honest with you. I feel like that was the if that same thing had happened in the fifth minute of the game, it wouldn't have been a penalty. And it doesn't matter. Ultimately, we still won. We won.
We did still win.
Yeah. Interesting as well that Guillaume Doucet was the healthy scratch for that game.
Yes, I did mean to mention it. Chris Culligan had sat on Friday in Manchester, Andrew Lloyd saying that he picked up a slight knock. You've seen that he's had for a while, obviously, you know, sitting occasionally. I thought that perhaps that was Lord's decision made for him, you know, the difficult decision we discussed last week. You wouldn't have had to worry about it if a guy's carrying an injury, but no, Doucet getting it, a guy who's, you know, consistently proven himself to be a game winner, not just for us, but throughout the Elite League, throughout his career. Aaron, did you think it was a ballsy move to drop Deuce, especially as, you know, he's found a bit of goal scoring touch the last couple of weeks, seems to be dropped in Belfast?
I can see why they, like, Lodo, made the decision, you know. Deuce, he does take a lot of penalties, so maybe that was in Lord's back of mind, like, you know, we could have been constantly on a penalty kill and, you know, it would have taken the sting out of our performance. He comes in spells, you know, he could score 12 goals in a row, or like he has been, you know, he scored up until that game, he scored 3 and 5, so that's not a bad total. But, he's quite a hit and miss player, so I can see why, at least, like Callaghan played, you know what you're going to get with him. You know, he's a two-way, he works his bag off going forward and going back, same as Deuce does, but I think Callaghan got that a little bit more defensive mind, so he knows, like, how, where to be positional-wise, I suppose you put it, but I agree with the decision because we won the cup, but I wouldn't say it was a ballsy move because, you know, you could have dropped Kearney, who had the man of the match, and Doucet might not have had the same impact, or, you know, at least with a guy that does take quite a lot of minutes, is quite forward-minded in the way he plays his hockey. You know, if you're putting in a two-way forward who can score and defend, you know, it's quite an easy move, in my opinion, but not to take any away from Deuce because I think he's a fantastic player.
You know, Aaron mentioned the penalty, Sean. You know, Deuce, we've discussed, has taken, you know, a lot of, you know, sticking penalties this season. Do you think the fact that he took a tripping and a hooking penalty Friday night in Manchester may have, you know, had some bearing on Lord's decision?
No, I don't think so. I think it's just it's a one-off game. It's quite an emotional sort of, you know, you get quite emotionally invested in it. And Deuce is a heart on the sleeve player, and when things don't go his way, he does tend to take a penalty or two. But I think Aaron is, you know, with Culligan, you know exactly what you're going to get. With the makeup of the team, we got a lot of clutch guys there who can score goals. And yeah, I felt like we needed someone in that two-way mold. I really wanted Chris Culligan to play that game because he was so big. He scored the cup-winning goal 2 years ago, and he just gives it everything every night. And he's produced a good couple of points this year, and he's done everything we've asked of him: playing defence, playing forward, playing hurt, everything. And look at the play in the last couple of minutes after his penalty is killed off, and two big shot blocks, and just the will to win in that last couple of minutes. And I think on the post game celebrations, they just caught a couple of minutes of it on the extended highlights. But you see Patrick Bordalo just look straight for Chris Culligan and point at him and make the point of what he did in that last minute, which helped them win the game. So, a ballsy move for sure. But ultimately the right one, and it paid off. And listen, Doucet was pumped to win that trophy. I know he would have loved to have played, but he was on the ice like a shot straight after the buzzer went, and it was great to see. It was great to see him still be part of the team in that respect.
Yeah, definitely good to see, you know, how much it meant to him, and that he was, you know, as involved as everyone else doing the presentations and the aftermatch celebrations. So, you know, well done all around. And you know, I think Aaron got the nail on the head that it was the right decision because the Devils lifted the trophy. Didn't matter who was sat, if you win the cup, the coach has got it right. Let's do a player of the week. Aaron, obviously, you didn't travel up to Manchester, so basing it mainly on the final, I would assume, but who gets your votes?
I'm going to go with the elusive game-winning goal scorer in the cup final, Lane Olmer. You know, he's been my favourite player for a long time. That's another reason I picked him, by the way, but he's been absolutely fantastic since Christmas. He did get 2 points in the Manchester game as well, but the fact that, you know, he put that puck in the net, and he wasn't the sole reason that we lifted that trophy. It was obviously a team effort, but the fact that he gets the game-winning goal, and for me, he's been fantastic throughout the Challenge Cup competition and the league competition. So, yeah, Lane Olmer gets my vote.
Sean, who gets your selection?
I'm going to go with Patrick Aslin. Gets the go-ahead goal in Manchester with a great finish, and then makes that play to drive up the left wing and absolutely, as Aaron said, undress Yared Haggas and make the pass to Lane Olmer for the as you mentioned and described it as the elusive game-winning goal, and just clutch basically gave us so much over the weekend, and ultimately had a massive part to play in both the league points and in the Challenge Cup victory. So yeah, it's going to be Patrick Aslin for myself.
Definitely a difficult one this week. So many people, you know, potentially to choose from. There's clutch and then there's being clutch, and I think scoring a cup-winning goal is as clutch as it gets. So my vote goes to Lane Olmer as well. The Challenge Cup winning player of the week, much to Aaron's delight. But as you said, probably could have picked one from eight, nine, ten players who all had fantastic weekends, and everyone played their part as well. So
they did. Joey Dad had a great weekend. Ben Bounds had a great weekend. Fantastic. Andrew Hotham was awesome. Scott Hotham was great as well. Gleeson Fournier with setting the tone in that game in the cup final. So.
Sure, just feed it, but it'd be easier.
Yeah, just give it a generic team of the week. We'll change it up this week.
Just one thing that we didn't mention, we've just gone through names, we've gone through the game, but just want to make Patrick Bordalo was a menace all game on Sunday. He set the tone, put himself out there. The fourth line again doing a great job with David Bryan on it as well. At one stage Jace Cole just fell over because Patrick Bordalo was near him. Just because you want to get rid of the puck, and you know, it's just things like that, and the mindset that line, you know, puts into the team. But you know, and someone else who had a great game, I didn't want to finish on the weekend without mentioning. So, one last little bit of the weekend to go, and the Rahmite suggestions. We've had a few, Sean, I believe, and a few notable names coming through as well for their first selections of Rahmites.
Yeah, we had one from Andy Culligan, Chris Culligan's father, who was at his Rahmite. He loved how the Challenge Cup officials basically put their whistles away, overlooking the headlocks and obvious slashes. Hated that they decided to make a really questionable penalty call with just under 3 minutes left in the game. Andy initially thought that the Steelers were going to be penalised on the incident where Chris Culligan got penalised, and even then he thought it was an unbelievably bad call at that stage of the game. So that was from Andy Culligan. We had a couple from Twitter on our mentions. Let me just go and have a look at those. Just start from the beginning. Thank you to everyone who sent them. We did get a good couple of them. Derek Farr said, credit the officials for their game management. It helps when teams want to play hockey and not fight and play dirty. Kenwyn Jones said he loved everything about the final, but hated that it's not the centre of ice hockey news this week, something which we'll come on to a little bit later. Rachel Hopley at Red Red Raz said she loved Sunday and hated Monday. I think I can sympathise with her there, Paul. I think you can
I definitely give a vote to that one. I think that's nail hit right on the head there.
Tony Dickens said he loved being part of the joy share between the players, management, owners and fans at the final buzzer, and he didn't send us a hate, so ultimately a great weekend for Tony Dickens. Thank you for sending us that one. And just looking for a couple more. Colin Knight said he loved watching Haggas all over the place for the game-winning goal. Literally, as Aaron said, just dangled out of his skin by Patrick Aslin. But Colin thought that the cup presentation was woeful. Obviously, no one from the Elite League to present the trophy on the night, which was quite disappointing, but I don't really care. It's our trophy. We can present it to ourselves. And lastly, we had one from Steve King, Devils owner. Said, my Rahmite for the week. I loved celebrating a massive Devils Challenge Cup win with Paul and Sean. I didn't love getting on a train 4 hours later, followed by a 9-hour flight, and being at work the next morning. So worth it. Keep up the great work. I listen to Red Army Roundup every week while I'm walking the dog. So thank you to Steve for sending us that. I must be quite honest. Paul and I have a bit of a hazy memory on the evening. I do recall seeing Steve a couple of times, but not for a particular lengthy duration. But I think that'll be the Guinness and the shots, to be quite honest with you. Paul?
It may have something to do with it. Hope it's not doing the dog walk at the moment.
For sure.
Are we done on Rahmite, Sean?
I believe we are. Thank you to everyone for sending them to us. What about your Rahmite, Paul? What was your Rahmite?
It's very hard to beat Rachel's of Sunday and Monday, but I think my love was probably selling a 50-50 shot of his back tickets on Sunday around the rink. I was usually down towards the Steelers end, and you're getting to mix with the Steelers fans, and then after the game in the bar and in town a few who went out with us. They were all just really good to chat to before the game, during the game, and after the game. You're really gracious. And a fan base that I know the least number of fans in, but they were a really good bunch and really enjoyed interacting with them. It's really hard to go for a hate at anything other than my Monday. It was it was uncomfortable.
And Aaron, your Rahmite?
How could it be anything else but the fact that Parker Gaslin broke Hargos' ankles, then Lane Elmo was in the shot and put it in the net. At this point, right, I had a pint in my hand and I was just like, I need to celebrate, but I need to drink my pint first. So I just net my pint and then joined the rest of the crowds of people jumping around and going a bit nuts. But yeah. My hate was probably the fact that I had to get up at 7:30 on Monday and do an 8-hour shift in work.
I feel for you.
That's not even my hate. That's my hate for, like, I'd say 80% of my life. That was the worst thing I've done in a while.
Gosh, Sean, what gets your pick?
Well, obviously, I loved that a couple of years ago when the Devils won the Challenge Cup, we were travelling all back from Sheffield, and the core of us that were all fairly close friends were all on different buses on the way home. Didn't quite get to enjoy it with each other as much as we should and deserve to. And this year we were all in the same block, and we didn't let it go to waste. We enjoyed it together, and that meant the most to me. That was my love. My hate, however, was, I do have a hate, and it wasn't the state on Monday, that wasn't all that bad. My hate was on Sunday night when I went into Tiger, got ID'd at the door, inevitable, obviously. Of those that know me, I'm no giant by any stretch of the imagination. And within 10 seconds of entering Tiger after showing my ID, was pulled aside and taken outside to show it again, and I actually thought that the person ID'd me was a Devils fan playing a practical joke, and may not have been particularly kind to the gentleman asking me. And when learning that he was the manager and genuinely serious, threatened to not let me in, and that wasn't particularly entertaining. I could have prematurely ended my night right there, and probably saved myself some money, but wouldn't have had the memories. I'll add one more love, and that is the savvy that I managed to take with Patrick Borlo, who just looks absolutely pumped to have won a trophy here in Cardiff.
I've got a new hate, and it's not seeing that happen.
Yeah. Save.
That is it. That's the hate of the season. I wish I'd seen that. Oh, that might be it. Contact Tiger for some CCTV footage. We have probably unsurprisingly talked quite long about that. We're coming at probably 10 minutes shy of our usual running time. So we'll do a little bit of a whistle stop tour around the news. it's on the list. Manchester Storm, Milton Keynes Lightning are for sale. Bit of a worry, Sean, that, you know, a team new to the league, team coming up to the league next season, both up for sale. I know Silver Blades have said they're happy to run it, but possibly a few doubts about the, you know, stability of those clubs at the moment.
Yeah, the one thing which sort of sticks out to me is that they mentioned in their article that the Silver Blades are in the business of running ice rinks, not in running ice hockey teams. But if they were making money, then I'm pretty sure Silver Blades wouldn't be looking to sell it at all. So there must be a couple of problems there. I don't imagine it's costing them an absolute fortune, but it's just a bit concerning that if they want to get rid of them, then they're not making money, and that's worrying, especially as Milton Keynes are joining up. And
another way that they could be making a smaller amount of money, but for the amount of effort, time that you have to invest in it.
Mm.
You know, if we look at the news story we're going to come on to, the risks of bad public exposure from running a hockey team.
Yeah, possibly, yeah.
It could just be that it's a risk reward that they're not prepared to take. So
yeah, I think the other slight thing was that they were looking for opportunities for people to run the team in Leeds. Bristol are getting a new rink, I believe. So I was kind of hopeful that those cities and those areas would look to have Elite League interest, and maybe the fact that they're looking to offload Milton Keynes and Manchester means that we won't see them with Elite League sides, at least in the near future. So that was mainly my gripe with it.
Okay, I think we'll then on that and move on to the biggest news story of the week. You know, Eclipse, the Devils win, and happened on the Saturday night game in Sheffield. Obviously, none of us were there, but I think the approved version of events is that two lads came up on the kiss cam in Sheffield, which they do, I think, most games. They both kissed their partners, who were female, and then kissed each other. And Dave Sim said, and I've not got it written down, so I'm not quoting him, "Ooh, that's disgusting. Security, get them out." I'd imagine he didn't go "ooh" at the start, though. obviously, this has caused quite a storm. I'd like to think that as a group, we don't need to discuss whether the comments are acceptable or not. I think it's quite clear that that's unacceptable, meant as a joke or not. Good, no one interrupted me to say they thought it was fine. You know, for someone to say in any sort of public context is just, and especially in front of thousands of people where there's kids and, you know, other younger, impressionable people who will think that sort of behaviour could be acceptable. It's the complete lack of action taken. The fact is, there's been a statement today from Sheffield, which still does absolutely nothing. And we've heard nothing from the Elite League officially, even though it obviously is the same people. If you're looking at the chairman, Sheffield are obviously not going to suspend or sack him, which if I said that in my job in front of anyone, I'm pretty confident I'd be suspended. I'm almost as confident that I'd be sacked. Sheffield are obviously not going to, but the Elite League haven't even said that he won't be able to chair board meetings or anything like that at all. And for me, I think it's just what was said was awful, but I think it's the way that it's just not been handled by the league just shows this league needs a total overhaul in governance. It's just totally unacceptable. I don't even know where to ask a question because I've just got on my soapbox. Sean?
You carry on. I quite enjoy Paul's soapbox. I'll listen to it all day.
I think I've wound myself down, so
I think you're completely right, Paul, in the fact that it just shouldn't happen. You know, it's what can you say? This sort of comment is completely unacceptable, regardless of where, like you said, if you said it even to one person, you would likely be sacked. And to say it when you've got an audience where you've got members of the LGBT community and probably in your audience is just, you know, where in your mind do you think that is an acceptable thing to say? Or even as a joke, you know, where does it click in your mind that absolutely baffling, just just think about what you say. Think about how many people are there and how many possible people are there and all the different ethnicities, backgrounds, and all that sort of thing. And in a crowd like that, you are going to have someone who is a member of that community and possibly offend them. And the worst thing is, as you said, it's just gone absolutely ballistic all over the hockey world and all over the LGBT community as well. With I think the editor of the Gay Times actually put a tweet out, and I think there's been an article written about it. A Puck Daddy, a big website in North America, has written an article about it. It just goes on and on. I believe one of the councillors in Sheffield, who's actually one of the directors of SIV who own the Sheffield Arena, is actually involved in it as well. And so I don't know. It's appalling the way it's been dealt with. It shouldn't be allowed to happen. It just makes it is just a genuine gong show. And more than anything, it's upset me that it shouldn't happen. And this week we should be celebrating one of the best. This has been the best one-off cup final out of the three. We've won it, and it should be the furore, and it should be the big fanfare about it. And it's not because this has happened. And I understand that the furor is because it shouldn't happen. I completely understand that. And it just paints such a shadow on this elite league, which has done so well in the last couple of years to build its reputation, and with the website, with the PR and the podcast and all that sort of thing. The elite league has done so many good things over the last couple of years to build its profile, and the caliber of player coming over here has been fantastic. And then this happens, and it's just an absolute travesty, to be quite honest with you.
And just to mention on top of that, around something should be the biggest news, there's your argument it shouldn't even be the biggest news. There's the wonderful story that's come out of Manchester Storm.
Yeah.
About 2-year-old Sebastian Pitts, who they flew over to Belfast on the weekend. He's got, you know, sort of a lot of neurological disorder, and as you know, they wheeled him around the ice. You know, did a lap of honour with the team, presented the Man of the Match award, and you know, that's gone on the BBC News, made BBC News, and that's gone quite big. You know, on Twitter, you know, a lot of people have seen it, a lot of people talking about how good it is, but even that brilliant story has been overshadowed by this. And it was just disappointing that, you know, as you said, time of a great match, but also, and it's such a heartwarming story, the Manchester thing, but just all ends up getting lost in amongst yet another Sims controversy. If this was the first time he'd done it, I'd say, all right, say you'll suspend him for a week or two, slap on the wrist, you know, it's just someone doing something unacceptable, but not really thinking. But there's a long line of incidents and things where good news stories get lost because everyone's talking about Dave Sims, and this may be the first time that he isn't happy that people are talking about Dave Sims, but there is a cynical part of me that thinks he probably is happy that people are still talking about him, because you get that impression that that's what he wants. Oh, that was depressing. Sorry, I mean, didn't come to you, but I unless you've got anything you desperately want to add, I'm going to move on.
The only thing I want to say on it is just the fact that, he hasn't apologised for saying it. He's apologising for offending people. And I think that's wrong, because whether you offend people or not, what you said is disgusting and wrong. You should be sorry for saying it, not just for offending people. That is the only thing I got to say. And it's just like, be gracious, accept you did wrong. I'm sorry. I won't do it. You probably will do it again, but you know, don't try and make it the fact that, oh, I offended someone, I'm sorry. Just be genuine and be sorry. You did wrong. Hold your hands up and take it on the chin.
Very good point. And I think perfect point to move on from and on to a big weekend for the Devils. Back focus 100% on the league action. Cup's done, controversy's out of the way for us. And, well, the weekend for the Devils really starts on Friday when Nottingham go over to Belfast. Obviously, Belfast, to all intents and purposes, being the the only challenger for the title. Obviously, mathematically not, but that's not the case. And you to see at the league, well, to finish above Belfast, the Devils need a 6-point swing over them. So every point they drop or every point we gain adds towards it. So a Belfast loss on Friday takes the Devils' points required to 4, and there are 4 points available this weekend. So Nottingham could do us a huge favour. They also play on Sunday, so a win then does the exact same thing to the points. So it could be a very, very good weekend, starting with Dundee on home. On home ice. I could have saved it, but I will carry on regardless. It's gone too long. Here we go, folks. Again, Sean, another team battling for their lives in those playoff places. And, you know, being a good team all season, you know, Scarsella, you're racking points up at the moment. Just going to be a really difficult night for the Devils.
And it's a potential banana skin again. And I think being on home ice is a massive thing for us. But going against a team like Dundee, it's a sold out crowd, and the boys will be spurred on by that again. And ultimately, I think we just have to turn up. We have to turn up and be our best, and ultimately that'll see us right, because we're a very, very good team. You mentioned Dundee have got some very good players, but ultimately in quality and all that, I think we are the better side. Obviously, the league table will tell you that, and they've got a good goalie as well. So it's by no stretch going to be easy, but if we turn up and give it our all, we're going to come out with a result, and that's all we need to concentrate as ourselves. Regardless of what happens in Friday in Belfast and Sunday in Belfast, we need to win these games, and 4 points this weekend will see us just need one more win. Where it comes from is irrelevant. We'll just need one more win if we win both these games.
It's totally in our hands. 3 wins, 6 games. Just setting the scene with the Belfast Friday game being first chronologically, but you know, with a big game on Sunday, Aaron, you know, Sean said we just need to turn up, but I think there's a risk that could pull a Sheffield almost and have one eye on that Sunday game rather than fully focusing on Saturday.
Yeah, it's a big possibility. You know, Sheffield down here against a Paul Coventry side, why couldn't it happen against us? You know, I don't think we'll do it. Lord's mantra this year has been one game at a time, and with the leadership in the room, I think everyone has bought into that, and everyone seems to be, you know, taking that into stride one game at a time. So I think I wouldn't say it's going to be an easy game. It'll be one that we can win easy if we turn up, like Sean said. But Dundee are a great side. You know, I think the fact that they short benched quite often the time due to injuries doesn't help, because, you know, they've played Sheffield, took them to overtime. They played Nottingham. Belfast did the same thing, or just collapsed in the third period where they literally just lose their legs. So hopefully something similar will happen for us. They might keep it close, but if we can blow them out like we did to Coventry, make it easier for ourselves, all the better.
Yes, yeah. And, you know, I said one eye on the Sunday game being bigger. Before the Coventry loss, it probably was a much bigger game in that, you know, Sheffield would have been one of the rivals for the title, and 2 points for them would have been a really big boost to their hopes. But at the moment, you want to say a win against Dundee, and you know, the best they can do is draw level on points with us. So it's not necessarily a bigger game anymore. It's just getting those 6 points, as Sean said. But in saying that, they are 2 of the points on offer, Sean. And you know, they're a team that are going to be smarting and wanting to come out for revenge, whether their title challenge is over or not.
Yeah, definitely. Well, Paul Thompson said in his post-game interview that it's a long way back from to even consider having a go at the title, but they want to make it as difficult as possible. You know, they're going to want to make it hard for us, and that's right. You know, they've got to pick their game up and go for some momentum going into the playoffs, and that's their last chance at a trophy this year, and they're going to want to be their best going into it and get themselves on a bit of a streak and be hot going into the postseason. So yeah, it's not going to be easy by any stretch, and you sort of feel like with the amount of wins we've had against Sheffield this year, we are probably due a loss up there. Have we lost up there this year yet? I don't think we have.
No, we've had 2 league and a cup game. We've won them all in regulation.
Yeah, exactly. So we're probably do something up there. And interesting that I saw a tweet from Jonathan Fernley that the last three results from the Challenge Cup winners have been pretty poor results. I think it was like 6-0, 11-0 and 5-1 in the last 3 years. So let's hope we can buck the trend against Dundee and then just roll it over and take it up to Sheffield.
Yeah, just keep it rolling. You know, this, we're a team in form, team playing well. And you said if we turn up, we can beat Dundee. I genuinely think at this stage of the season, if we turn up, we can beat anyone in the league. It's, as you said, the league table doesn't lie, and we're just a team in form and really high on confidence. So it'll hopefully be a really good weekend with, you know, a good number of Devils fans travelling up for a Sunday night game. Couple of seats available on Red Army Travel. I almost went a whole episode without a plug, but just couldn't help myself. Sorry. We are there. That's a bit of a whistle stop end to the show after we obviously focused for quite a long time on the Challenge Cup final. Sean, Aaron, anything else that you wanted to add on the weekend, any of the incidents or anything at all?
Paul, did I mention we won the Challenge Cup again?
Oh, thank you for bringing that to my attention.
I didn't know if you were aware. I thought you might have forgotten.
It is always good to mention. We like to, you know, to bring the latest news on the podcast. So thank you for that. Breaking news: Devils win the Challenge Cup. I'll take Aaron's silence as he's fallen down a hole somewhere, and leave me all that's left to do is to thank you all for listening again. Please do send us your Armites from this weekend and your thoughts on anything that we've discussed or you'd like us to discuss. But for now, we're the Challenge Cup winners, and that's your Red Army Roundup. Devon inside, Devon inside, every single one of us, Devon inside, Devon inside.